Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 7, with Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steeler internet site on the web, and David Todd of TheHammerSpeaks.com. Dave, we got one game in the books. We got a new signing. We got some injuries since we last talked. We got a fair amount to get to today.
Yeah, thank God football's back. I've been enjoying breaking down meaningless preseason tape over and over again. Just so glad to have it back. But yeah, there's been quite a few happenings since our last podcast. Baron Batch, what a sad story that is. You know, ACL injuries do not discriminate good or bad people, and he of course will have his surgery now on Wednesday and will be lost for the year. So that's the first thing that happened. The Jericho Cotri signing is official now. He took part in his first practice yesterday, and that's exciting. We'll get into whether or not that's a good move. And the other thing of note is Tony Hills is going to be starting at right guard against the Eagles in the next game. And let's see, what else is there?
Ike Taylor got a busted thumb.
Right, Ike Taylor has a busted thumb, and I wouldn't expect to see him throughout the rest of the preseason.
Well, let's get into this stuff. Let's first talk about the injuries. Yeah, Batch, as you said, unfortunate. He was going to be a situational back, but he was certainly a highlight of camp early. And as you and I have talked about, one of the things we see in training camp is, you know, when some of the older guys are skipping time or working their way into it slowly, you see guys on the PUP list and you see guys you know about. So what's fun to write about and what's fun to talk about is guys that people don't know about and who is kind of exceeding expectations. And Baron Batch was clearly the darling of the media the first week of camp. Unfortunate injury. I expect him to be back full speed, 12 months from now, hopefully at OTAs next kind of March, April, May, him getting a chance to get back in, learn the offense, get involved in it. And, you know, he'll have a shot to make the team. But obviously, he's injured reserve for the year. The other one is Ike Taylor. As you said, he probably doesn't go, maybe gets a few plays in the last preseason game if he feels he needs the reps. One of the things I was curious about, Dave, on your thoughts, is clearly this is a, you know, this is a cast on his, I think, on his left thumb. It looks to me like conditioning won't be an issue. I mean, he can run, he can do all these things, he can be on the bike. I would even think that he could do some skeleton drills in terms of lining up and getting reps in practice. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think after he has this surgery and it cools down, you know, maybe not the rest of this week, of course, but coming back from the game on the next game against the Eagles, I think you could very well see that. And if you watch those first few plays against the Redskins, when he was in there, man, the guy looks like in mid-season form, even on the tackle. Supposedly it was the second defensive play of the game, on the run by Hightower to the left side where Ike had to leave his man and come up and make the tackle on. It was classic Ike Taylor. And, I think the guy keeps himself in such top physical shape. He mentioned in an interview yesterday that, you know, he's OCD when it comes to workouts and all like that. And I don't think he's going to skip a beat. Sure, it would be nice to have him maybe in that fourth preseason game get a couple of reps. But as long as he's back by week one, I'm not too worried about it.
Yep, I generally agree with that. We did see that a lot of guys have missed some time here, and guys missed some of the game. We've seen the young cornerbacks didn't dress for the game, were injured. As you pointed out, Lima Swede dressed, but did he participate at all?
There was no participation on him on the offensive side of the ball. He was listed as did not play in the box score even, so that meant no special teams work at all. Now, he was back at practice yesterday. Yep. Supposedly had a nice day, but, the fire's underneath his ass now because of Cotri and everything else going on. I mean, he would really have to do something over these last three games to steal that, six wide receiver spot, and that's even if now the Steelers keep six, you know, depending with the depth and all right now. I'm not even convinced at that point. It's one of the things I'm struggling with setting my own kind of projection roster right now is will they or won't they keep the sixth guy, you know, for special teams purposes.
Well, let's go into a couple of the position things again. I think that's always the interesting stuff here as we talked about the roster stuff. So in the wide receiver thing, we know who the top four are, the two young guys and the two starters. And then guys in the conversation are obviously Jericho Cotchery. He looks like he's, I would say he's virtual lock to make the team unless he is really unimpressive here over the next 2 weeks as a fifth receiver who may see time in a slot role in a four wide receiver set. And then you've got competing for practice squad spots or roster spots or going to be waived are Tyler Grisham, who I think is out of is now not eligible for the practice squad. Lima Swede, not eligible for the practice squad. Arnez Battle, obviously not eligible for the practice squad. And then all the undrafted free agents, none of whom are going to make the squad, but who are eligible for the practice squad.
Yeah, you know, I would even go as far as right now to say that even, I mean, let's face it, Antonio Brown's had a great camp and he had a great game the other night. One of the things I was looking forward to seeing was his blocking and all, which he showed us that. It looked like his recognition was there as well. What a great story, I mean, it is for his progress. Now, as far as behind him, you know, if Emmanuel Sanders is forced to miss even more time and perhaps let's theorize maybe the first preseason game against the Ravens, I think that you might even
regular season game.
I mean, the regular season game against the Ravens. Yeah, I think there's a chance that you see Jericho is the third guy because he's better suited for that slot type position. You know that Emmanuel and Antoine Randall played last year, so that would still mean that Antonio would be fourth on the depth chart. But you could see quite a bit of the four wide receiver looks this year. So as far as that between Battle, he had what, three drops the other night against?
To me, that's just, I mean, unless the guy is a magician on special teams, I don't know how you keep him. I mean, certainly he's never going to be in your four or five wide set. So, I mean, the guy has to be an elite special teams player to make my roster. So I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. That's the case. So be it, because that's his role.
Well,
but
I think
certainly not going to be a wide receiver.
I think that he was on all these special teams units the other night as well, and he sure does get downfield good. But you know, with this kickoff, with all these kickoffs, you know, sailing out of the end zone and all now, really, I mean, is that spot? You know, could one of these rookies, you know, Curtis Brown or Cortez Allen, could one of these guys, you know, fill that role and make Battle almost really, you know, not needed? Same really goes for Tyler Grisham too. If the guy's not a a full gunner type guy, you know, is there really a reason to keep a six wide receiver on the roster at this point?
No, I don't think there is, and you're going to, as we've talked about, some of those undrafted free agents are going to be on this practice squad, at least one of them. So, effectively, that's your sixth wide receiver. So, yeah, I think we're generally in agreement there, although the one thing that I probably don't agree with you as much on is, you know, Manny Sanders, look, you know, doctors are making their best guess, and when they say 2 to 3 weeks, you know, you assume it's 2 to 3 weeks. Now, they were wrong in their initial prognosis, but you have to understand that guys missed a fair amount of time. You know, if it were another month from today, which would be the first preseason game, that would be, you know, they missed it pretty badly. So I'd be surprised if he's not around for the last preseason game and the first regular season game. But obviously, we'll just see how that plays out, and that, you know, that may affect the initial construction of the roster. But let's get to you spent a lot of time breaking down film, as you always do, on the offensive line, and I think maybe this is shaping up as the most interesting stuff going on for the Steelers here in camp. Tell me your thoughts on. Tell me about general participation, and then B, your thoughts on how guys graded out.
Well, I thought if anybody's worried about Willie Colon, I tell you what he showed in that first game was absolutely fantastic. He graded out perfect to me. He only played 12 plays. Jonathan Scott on the left-hand side, I thought he played well too. One thing I just posted up on SteelersDepot.com was the direction, play direction report, and the Steelers never ran to the left side, against the Redskins there. So, you know, it's kind of hard to judge outside of pass protection on Jonathan Scott, but, I mean, I thought he graded out fine for the 12 plays he was in there. Where it gets a little bit more interesting is we know Chris Scott got the start at right guard. We had heard that, you know, okay, this kid's having a good camp. Mike could win this right guard spot. He really did not look good. And what's even worse about that is I think his indecision affected, the pass protection play of Marquise Pouncey in the process. And I just think that kind of showed in Pouncey's pass protection, because I had Pouncey as allowing two pressures. Now, of course, it rusty first game of the year and all like that. But, Pouncey, I have no worries about. And evidently there's a concern at right guard, because I had to check for sure if that was Tony Hills out there or not, and double check the number three times. But he started it. I mean, he didn't start, but he came in to replace Jonathan Scott at left tackle and then later moved to right guard. And, man, he looked pretty daggum good. Now, of course, it was a level of competition that he was against, and it'll be interesting this week. I think that's why he's getting the bump now this week is, hey, let's see how you do against this, which looks to be a great Eagles defensive front. He'll get to show his wares this week. Ramon Foster, pretty good showing at the left guard spot. Right now, I'm kind of at a loss because I didn't have Tony Hills making this roster.
We didn't have Tony Hills sniffing this roster.
Well, let's say for some god unknown reason that he does.
I mean, I agree with you that it wasn't in. We laughed about it that he was still in camp and he wasn't even going to get the reps, and now he's he's not a starter, but he is starting Thursday, and he's obviously impressed enough to make an impact, and he's in the conversation now.
Is this a sink or swim opportunity? I mean, it's got to be a sink or swim opportunity. Let's say he swims this week and continues to swim the rest of the preseason. I mean, surely you're not going to keep that one extra lineman. So does that mean that Keith Williams, the rookie left guard, do you risk losing him, trying to slide him to the practice squad?
Yep.
Is Chris Scott a guy that still has eligibility for the practice squad? Does he get released? To me, it's one of those two guys, because I don't think you're going to release Ramon Foster, at least not what I saw on tape the other night. So you could very well see Keith Williams or Chris Scott get released in an effort to get either one of those two to the practice squad.
I think that, all of a sudden that is at least becoming a conversational point. And I think you're dead on. Tony Hills, if he grades out very well the next two games, because of the roster situation and the short preseason or the short lead up to the preseason, roster rules are different this year, and these teams are going to be able to keep virtually everybody they want in camp until the last cut. And so what I think you'll see is, while you'll see guys get claimed on the waiver wire, I think it might be easier this year to get guys through to the practice squad. Not that many guys get claimed anyway, but I wouldn't feel that there's a huge risk in either Chris Scott or Williams getting claimed, because other teams aren't really going to have seen these guys, and so they're just going to take flyers on the fact that Scott was a fifth-round pick last year and Williams a sixth-round pick this year. So, that's just me speculating on how things might go. I would still think both of them have to have a leg up on Tony Hills, but as you said, Scott looked bad and Hills look good. So if that's happening on a daily basis in camp, it could definitely swing things.
Well, Keith Williams might be the safest guy here. Let me tell you why. It looks primarily like he's a left guard type. So I would think, Chris Scott, it looks like he's more of a right tackle, right guard type guy, and it would be easier for Williams, perhaps, if ever needed an emergency situation, to probably hop over to the right side. So maybe Chris Scott's the guy with that bad stuff on tape right now that they kind of keep low and then slide him on back to the practice squad this year. One guy that you'll get a kick out of that graded out pretty good was the third center into the game, the pit boy, John Malecki.
Yep.
I thought he, in limited time, I thought he played, pretty well. Of course, the level of competition wasn't there. It'll be fun to watch his snaps going forward until, he's going to be released. But, I think this is a guy, too, that you could get, slid over to the practice squad as well.
Yeah, and even a late signing into camp. So he's a name that, obviously, being a local kid, he's 23 years old. The Steelers got an easy chance to get a look at him and get a read on him, get reports on him. So nice to see a local kid getting some snaps, get some playing time, and see what happens. Tell me your thoughts on Doug Ligurski and where he stands in the whole picture.
Well, you know, he's your backup center. Let's face it. He didn't have his best game the other night, I don't think. He might be just kind of a slow starter getting into the groove. He started at left guard and then, of course, slid over to center when Pouncey left the game. Not awesome, but I'm not worried about him. He's your backup center. He's your backup swing everything at this point. And there's no doubt, barring injury, that he makes the roster.
Absolutely. His performance in the Super Bowl guaranteed him a roster spot this year. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. Another interesting position battles going on where there seems to be, you know, I hate to say it, it maybe a glut of talent on the D-line with guys like Steve McClendon playing well, Anthony Gray playing well. You're loaded up with your three starters and your two stud young kids in Hayward and Ziggy Hood. So you've got five guys set. You're going to probably keep at least – you're going to keep one more guy probably on the D-line to have six. I guess there's an outside chance you could go seven. But, Chris Hoke is maybe a bit vulnerable here.
The position flexibility that guy gives you as far as being able to know the duties and responsibilities at a left defensive end spot. We saw him had to do that last year. I think a lot of these guys can be slid to the practice squad that are playing so good. As a matter of fact, Anthony Gray, I think I just got confirmation that we're going to be talking to him in a little bit, and that should be on the second half of this show. I think a guy like that shows a lot of promise. Is it impossible that Chris Hoke, is not a cut? I mean, it still could happen. This guy is by no means a lock, but I think what he gives you as far as the flexibility and the knowledge of the defense and all like that, right now I would have him about 80-85% safe.
Yeah, and Sonny Harris is done, waived injured when the Steelers made a roster move to bring Kimo Atu off the PUP list. The other guy that's getting a little bit of noise, clearly would have to be a practice squad guy, is Corbin Bryant out of Northwestern. Both he and Gray are supposed to be massively strong guys, interior guys, but Bryant can also play the end. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out if those guys get some time. Again, guys you'd like to see get to the practice squad, and I imagine in their cases that probably will be able to happen. Any more news on Wesley Saunders and how the tight end position is shaping up?
This is a guy, and when we talked to him the other day, I have no doubt this guy can get downfield and do things in the passing game coming out of the Steve Spurrier spread offense. You have to wonder, though, since the last time that we talked and since I did my very first 53-man projection, John Gilmore was not on the roster at the time. I thought Gilmore, had a good first game. I mean, it wasn't fantastic. I thought he looked like he knows what's going on out there and seemed to get the job done out there. Saunders, I think, is kind of struggling with kind of that H-back role and the recognition, and that's to be expected from a young guy that's really, making that transition to be a multi-purpose number two tight end / H-back. So, maybe if they don't carry a six receiver, maybe that opens up a spot for maybe a fourth tight end, which I think you even mentioned that in previous podcasts. Maybe this guy does make the roster as kind of a developmental fourth tight end, because I think if you try to slide him to the practice squad, he had such a big name prior to the draft. It's definitely gonna show up on the waiver wire as a name that sticks out, and he very well could get claimed and go elsewhere. So,
I'll tell you what else was interesting about that. You remember he talked about being rooming with his Clemson buddy Miguel Chavis, and they have moved Miguel from defensive end to tight end. He's wearing 46 in practice today. So they're, I can't imagine a guy like him is going to make the roster, but certainly they made that move because they see some potential there and like the way he moves on the line, obviously like the way he uses his hands. These two roommates might be effectively competing for a spot or a practice squad spot. Interesting little move as they finish their work in Latrobe, which tomorrow is I guess they'll be up there Wednesday. Tomorrow's the last day it's open to the public.
Yeah, and let's face it, though, even with that move this late in camp, this next preseason game is when these guys are going to get their most work, because usually the third preseason game is used mostly kind of as a tune-up where you see your starters more. So depending on where Chavis comes in the rotation, that's going to tell you all you need to know. I think there's absolutely no chance that he makes the 53-man roster, but what he's doing, in essence, as you pointed out, was probably maybe a practice squad spot here. So that definitely bears watching. Getting back to Gilmore real quick, if he doesn't sign this week, you know, Reggie Kelly's still out there as well, and I wouldn't rule him out being signed to the roster still, because let's face it, this guy was recruited by Bruce Arians way back in his college days and played one season for him. So, you know, he knows what's going on probably in that offense. So keep your eye out on that if Gilmore, you know, doesn't flash this week.
Yeah, Jamie McCoy was talked about a little bit, same issues. It seems like they're not thrilled with what they have backing up Heath Miller. David Johnson maybe didn't have his best effort on Friday night. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like they have some talent there, but maybe it's all just undeveloped stuff, and they're really looking for a guy to be a mauler. And, you know, you don't think of Matt Spaeth as that guy at all, but he was always in those goal line sets. Maybe, you know, as you and I talked about, maybe Matt Spaeth was a little better blocker than people actually realized. And not that that's an irreplaceable hole, but it's a hole that probably you and I didn't expect to be something the Steelers would be so focused on filling in terms of not being able to find the quality guys.
Yeah, David Johnson, I think, you know, just his size and his build and all, I just don't think he's very well suited for an inline tight end, say like a Gilmore or Wesley Saunders is. So I think he's best suited for that H-back type role. He's a huge special teams contributor, so I mean, it'd be hard seeing him getting cut, not making the 53 for that reason alone, especially if you're going to, you know, really kind of trim some other roster spots, some big-time special teams players like Battle or something. So it's an interesting scenario, though, that you threw out, and it really got me thinking this morning about maybe, you know, if Saunders can show anything in this preseason game against the Eagles, especially in the passing game, I think you could see us keep four tight ends.
Yep. Let me throw one other name at you. I haven't watched the tape a second time yet, but the kid from Michigan, Donovan Warren, got a little run. The little bit I saw, he looked okay, because a lot of the younger guys didn't get reps. So he got some more reps. What'd you see from him?
I mean, he looked okay. A lot of, you know, when he was thrown at, I think was when the second quarterback of the Redskins were in the game, and some of those younger wide receivers were starting to see their, you know, get their shots and all like that. So, I mean, it's so hard late in games like this to judge the cornerback play. I did see it look like some few times with those guys late in the game or later in the game, just, you know, some confusion of where the, you know, who had what and trying to adapt to the kind of zone play. It looks like he can tackle. That's about the bright spot from the other night, except for a few of the longer pass plays that went for the yardage. Everybody in that secondary seems willing and able to put a helmet on somebody and tackle, because, you know, let's face it, that's something that's needed in a Dick LeBeau secondary.
Yeah, and our runner-up of surprise of camp, Tony Hills has clearly got the leg up on winning this award, but the runner-up on surprise of camp, particularly after the early returns we got, has to be Jonathan Dwyer getting some positive feedback and you know, looking okay in the game on Friday.
Yeah, man, I couldn't. I had to check.
You and I were laughing.
I was all over his film, and you know, there were some instances where he looked like in pass protection. I saw him chip one or two times on his way out, which was nice to see. I saw him stick his head in there, kind of timid still, but he's doing the things that we've talked about. You know, David, there's no doubt, I don't think, you know, we both agree this kid can run the ball. We've said it several times. It's just the other things. His conditioning seems to be getting in order, although I saw on one of the kickoff coverages where they had a close-up on him, looks like he's got some Krispy Kreme donuts still hanging around in there. But I did see progress over what I saw week 17 against the Browns last year. So with the Baron Batch injury, I think there's a good shot now that Jonathan Dwyer, it would take something, you know, really amazing for him to not to nail down this fourth running back position right now.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. I mean, John Clay is a long shot now. Batch, yeah, that injury opens a spot for Dwyer. And with, you know, hopefully he takes this step forward here. And, you know, he's the guy who's going to get more carries and more assignments this week against, as you mentioned, a pretty good Philadelphia defense, which has added a fair amount of talent with Jason Babin on one end, with Trent Cole on the other. They got two defensive ends, and we know all about their corners and the other things they've done. So I don't know how much burn those guys will get for the Eagles this week, but it'll be a good test for the guys. And, you know, like we said, it wasn't a good performance against the Redskins. I mean, just flat out, you can probably on one hand, you know, list the guys who got pretty good grades in this game. So we'll see what happens. You know, it's a little bit, reminded me a little bit of the preseason game against Denver last year when Keenan Lewis had his nightmare and the team just looked flat and didn't look particularly good. You don't love seeing it. It's the first preseason game, nothing to get too worked up about. Dave, anything else you want to hit here before we get to Anthony Gray, our interview with Anthony Gray?
Not too much. Just if you, I mean, anything imaginable right now I have up on the site, you know, as far as your participation reports from the other night, how many games people played. I have the coverage stats to look at. And as I mentioned earlier, I have the play direction report and all. Overanalyzing, yes, I'm guilty of that a lot. But you see a lot of things on tape when you go through four, five, six times and all. And, you know, there, like you said, there wasn't a lot to get excited about, but there were some bright spots. Antonio Brown, fantastic game. I thought the Redmond run in particular, all the way around, nice blocking there. There were some bright spots. I mean, yeah, I know they lost, and the Redskins played their first team for pretty much all the first half there, and that's going to happen. This will be a good test this week against the Eagles, though.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we'll get into, as we mentioned in the last podcast, we'll get to start taking a look around the NFL and particularly around the division here later this week and next week as we get into things. We got a game coming up right coming at us Thursday night at home against the Eagles. So we will be all over that, and then we'll start broadening out a little bit, and we'll get, as I mentioned, we will get this on a more normal schedule, probably 3 days a week, and we'll just figure out exactly what makes the most sense. But certainly into the regular season, we will be on air on Monday, every Monday after Steeler game, so you can count on that. So, Dave, without further ado, should we get to Anthony Gray?
Yeah, let's get to the Anthony Gray interview, and next week we'll touch on maybe a little bit on the Ravens and the Lee Evans trade for him as well.
Yep, good stuff. Okay, thanks for listening to the first half of the Terrible Podcast. Stay tuned for Anthony Gray coming up next.
This is Dave Bryan. We had some technical difficulties with the phone call with Anthony Gray in his interview. I'm trying to clean it up as best that I can. Partly it was due to a connection on my end along with a bad cell connection with Anthony. So I'm going to post the rest. You've already listened to the first half of this podcast. If I'm able to clean this audio up from our interview, I'll add it on here this afternoon. And if not, we'll try to get Anthony back on for an interview. And we thank Anthony for his time, and we're sorry for the technical difficulties. Thanks for listening.